This is audio of The Book of Margaret Storm, Return of the Dove, Part I. Now and in the beginning. Now it is early November, 1957, here on the planet Earth. It is a glad November, a special kind of November decked with a sparkle and a twinkle and with long tall nights stretching upward to the stars. There are two new pinpricks of light up the which we call Sputniks. Later they will be joined by other little moons and little satellites, all rollicking and frolicking together, round and round the globe, like the gay wooden horses on a merry-go-round. Yes, indeed, it is a glad November. Then there are those lovely saucers flying about everywhere, their brilliant colors flashing like a peacock's tail. Many of them come to us over great cosmic light ways, winging their way even without wings, traveling about God's great playground, propelled by the sustaining breath of his love for his children, even the foolish ones who now need be foolish no longer. For that is what makes it a glad November here on the planet Earth. We need be foolish no longer. Now we can awaken, stretch our minds and hearts up, up, up until we hit a star. We have been prodigals for the last 19 million years, and the diet of husks has been awful. But the bad dream is over. We can relax and prepare for the feast. A grand and wonderful festival of human victory which will last for 2,000 years. By that time we will have long since forgotten about the husks and the 19 million years of planetary isolation, and we will be out there riding the lightways in spaceships, hopping from star to star on our cosmic assignments, while the great symphony of the spheres plays on and angels sing. Of course, we still have with us in these latter days the diehards, the spoil sport, the screwballs, the oddballs, the sad sacks, and a whole assortment of wet blankets in a wide variety of sizes, shapes and shades. They are the ones with the souped-up egos. They do not buy the idea of spaceships, music of the spheres or the singing of angels. They are the foolish ones who want to continue their foolishness. In the hospital world that we have known for millions of years during our cosmic quarantine, it is correct to say that most of us have been foolish in the majority of our embodiments. We have been dreadful phonies, strictly hams, acting out roles on a stage called the world, a stage like a mixed-up upside-down cake with an animated crazy quilt for a platter. With such a design for living, it is a matter of no wonderment that whoever is in charge had to send flying saucers to rescue us, warn us, cajole us, or to just haul some of us off to a new dumping ground, to a new sort of hospital planet devoted exclusively to drying out wet blankets and removing the sadness from sacks. And that, if you please, just at the very moment when the chemise became high fashion. But those of us who are left here on the planet Earth, who will continue our revolution here after the saucers have flown the cracked cups away to a new repair shop. Well, we will have a whale of a cleanup job ahead of us because this globe has been lacking in good housekeeping for a long, long time. We will have to step out and keep up with the Joneses, only this time they don't live down the street, they live up there on those gay, sparkling spheres called Venus, Mars, Jupiter and so forth, and in places which sound like a melody. Aquaria, Clarion and a tiny little lighted jewel of a planet called Excelsior. Excelsior, it has been said, is a delightful little place inhabited by little people, but real little people, very beautiful little men and women of exquisite stature towering 2 or perhaps even 3 inches in height. They have perfect forms which move and float in rhythmic dances of breathtaking beauty and grace. They have never known distress of any kind, they are God's dedicated little children, their fire dances in honor of the sacred flame are all expressions of thanksgiving to their Creator for his gift of life. That is their way of praying. Dancing is to them synonymous with living, or the expressing of gratitude for limitless cosmic abundance. They are extremely artistic, and when they are not dancing, they are constantly helping the little nature spirits, the fairies, the elves, the water sprites, to rearrange the decorations on the surface of their planet. Perhaps a miniature rose tree just there, and a tiny waterfall plunging dizzily down from a sheer drop of 1 foot would be effective as a backdrop for a new dance. Are ideas such as these pondered by the little men and women who live on Excelsior? The heavy foot of an earthling may never tread on Excelsior, but it is said that spaceships are equipped with marvelous viewing devices which will bring a planetary surface into a clear focus such as would make all Hollywood's cameras and screens seem like instruments as primitive as a stone arrowhead. Truly, the cosmos is a place fascinating beyond the imagination of man, and best of all, it is man's heritage. That is where we belong. Out there in the playground of the gods, far beyond the silly Sputniks, the false moons, the grapefruit-sized satellites, even beyond the moon itself, and beyond the neighboring planets and stars and into the great golden pathway of the Milky Way. We belong far beyond all the rubbish and rubble of this once magnificent planet which we ourselves have turned into a hell. The universe is our heritage and we have but to claim it, to explore it, to revel in its fathomless beauty. It is all ours to use, to improve, and to love. That is the clue. It is ours to love. But we have forgotten how to love natural things. God-created things. We love only our own grotesque miscreations, our mighty death-dealing weapons, our sculptured monuments marking blood-stained battlefields, our martial music designed to stir the hearts of men as they march forth to kill and to be killed, our guided missiles conceived by unguided men left helpless and bereft without knowledge of their source, our ungreat bombs that can pulverize a great city at one blow, our unmighty dew line, known among the hush-hush boys, among the don't tell the taxpayer boys, as the busted bubble. We love to visit our spacious cemeteries, crowded to overflowing with the silent dead. We love to bedeck the graves with ugly arrangements of withering flowers, piling dead upon death. We are sorry we could not give our beloved a more handsome tombstone, but taxes ride beside death on this planet. You know how it is. There was the hospital bill, the doctor bill, the X-ray bill, the bill at the corner drugstore, plus a whopping big bill from the surgeon who cut and carved and sliced and sawed with all his might and main while death just stood there and waited patiently. It was by no whim of chance that our cosmic hierarchy designated the Earth as planet D in this solar system. That letter has come to stand for death, destruction, devastation, desperation, deficits, depletion, depression, devils and the dew line. It also stands for dainty dancers who have never known distress. But that is on the planet Excelsior. Somewhere out there in space, somewhere out there where the wind is singing, where the air is fresh and sweet as white daisies laughing in the sun, the little planet spins on its course. A tiny crystal globe is alight with the sacred flame and around it the little men and women circle in their rhythmic dance, their hearts aflame with love of the one. The little waterfall splashes merrily. A brilliant butterfly flits about the miniature rose tree and finds a resting place. The stillness vibrates with rapture. The dance goes on and on. On Excelsior. And here on this earth death still rides in the saddle but not for long. Now in this glad November we can live with joy again. Now is the moment of appraisal. Now is the time to catch, to hold, to examine a fleeting cosmic instant covering 19 million years in the cycle of human history on this planet Earth. For now in these early November days of 1957 we know that the long and terrible chapter of human struggle has been finished. That is, it is finished for those who want it that way. For the others, the die-hard skeptics, the sinister secretives, the know-it-all, the so-waiters for all these and others of their tribe, special provision will be made. But elsewhere, somewhere, not here, not on this planet, has really had it, and far, far beyond the call of duty. That call first came sounding through the entire galaxy 19 million years ago. The universe had assembled a large number of refugees from evolution. These were the laggards, the leftovers, the rejected ones from other planets and stars in this and other solar systems. Using their free will in a destructive manner, they had made orphans of themselves by refusing the guidance of their own higher natures, their own divine selves, and preferred to dally away their time in experimenting with miscreations of their own rather than in learning to create according to the divine plan. They contributed nothing constructive to the whole of which they were an integral part. They had skipped so many classes in evolution that they could not hope to catch up. Their miscreations proved so imperfect and destructive that they were finally refused further opportunities to incarnate within their own groups. So the Earth people came forward and offered to help the laggards by receiving them into families here. No other planet had a classroom for these problem students, or at least no other planet was willing to tackle the job of trying to redeem them. But the Earth was a young planet, vigorous and strong, magnificently beautiful, abundant and full of promise. Disease was unknown. There was no distress in the sense of strain or pain. Members of the first drought race were brought to the Earth in a natural spaceship, a force field formed by their Manu. They were accompanied by their teachers, sages and hierarchs representing the seven great cosmic rays, the sacred flames which contain within their fiery essence all the virtues of the Godhead. This first group settled down in what is now familiarly known as the Grand Teton area in Wyoming. That country is still beautiful today, but in those days the entire globe was a sphere of unrivaled beauty. It is said that Amaryllis, the goddess of spring, so loved the Earth that she spent 900 years supervising its decoration, preparing it for the first guests. Over the entire globe the climate was always pleasant, neither too warm nor too cold, a land of eternal spring. There were no storms, floods, hurricanes, blizzards or natural catastrophes because there was no discord among the people. Human beings definitely make their own weather conditions. Moreover, the clear and beautiful lower atmosphere around the Earth became steadily more and more radiant as the hierarchs and sages instructed the people how to draw forth the god essence of the rays, how to magnetize and anchor the sacred fire upon their altars, so that it would be readily available for use for any practical purpose that might arise. The people had chosen to come into physical embodiment in order to use their thoughts, feelings, spoken words and actions in the material atmosphere of these lower realms, and thereby gain self-mastery within a certain environment. Embodiment was in the nature of a scientific experiment, an opportunity to use the sacred flame on matter of a low vibration and yet secure a harmonious result. These people knew that matter was spirit slowed down, and that spirit was matter speeded up. As more and more energy was drawn forth from the seven rays and anchored in matter, the colors in the lower atmosphere of the Earth became beautiful, positive and constructive. The music of the spheres was a natural outpouring from the Earth because of the sustained radiation, and in those days all the stars and planets sang together in one vast symphonic paean of praise to the God of Love who had created a great cosmic paradise for his children. The Earth people, living in this radiant atmosphere, were constantly bathed in these glorious emanations which flooded the Earth from outer space, and then ascended back to the source, for it is in the nature of the flame, even physical fire, to rise. As a result, the people felt buoyant, energized and spiritually attuned at all times. Their vision was unclouded and they had not only the visible and tangible evidence of the incoming rays, and the rising flames, but they were in constant association with cosmic beings, masters of the ageless wisdom, archangels, and the seraphic and cherubic hosts. Each root race was supposed to spend 14,000 years on the planet, permitting the formation of seven sub-races, each under one of the seven rays. That arrangement gave opportunity for a full round of experience under 49 different sets of conditions. The first two root races accomplished this with ease, for they had no weight of discord upon them. At the close of this type of initiation into self-mastery, each individual then accomplished the ascension, that is, he had attained complete command over matter so that he was able to raise the vibration of the physical atoms which COM-9 pose his body and ascend to his home star to await his next evolutionary assignment. Save for the long drag of time, the initiatory system on this planet remains the same today. At some time, in some embodiment, each individual must make his own ascension. He must be able to achieve mastery over matter, raise the vibrations of his physical body, form a force field or personal spaceship and ascend to his home star. During the present Aquarian age all death, as we know it today, will cease on this planet. Each individual will be scientifically trained to make his ascension, exactly as it is done on other planets. The clue to the ascension, in olden times as well as now, is the use of love. If there is any discord shown toward matter, toward a physical atom, it is impossible to raise the vibration in a natural way, but only by the use of brute force such as modern scientists advocate. Discord has the effect of lowering vibrations. The early initiates were trained by adepts from other planets who came to the Earth to assist the first inhabitants. Each individual, in experimenting with matter, was trained to lovingly call forth the God substance which forms the nucleus of the atom, inviting it to rise and return to the source. The entire atom responded by increasing the rate of its revolution and rising. This method is still the one and only method by which the ascension can be achieved today. Each and every human being must make the ascension from this Earth classroom before he can progress further in evolution elsewhere. Love is the one and only answer. Jesus, the great disciple of light, demonstrated the ascension 2,000 years ago, but the dark forces working within Christianity perverted the true teachings, and the long-suffering public continued to suffer and pay the bills. Page 10. The Third Root Race, under the loving direction of its Manu, spread its activities out over the globe to the east and the west, the north and the south. The objective was always the same: to call forth the God essence within the rays, to anchor that divine energy within matter, thus spiritualizing the very earth itself so that eventually the atoms would open like budding flowers, freeing the imprisoned light in the center of the atom, a light which had gained in brilliance because of its service of the planet. The light thus set free by the action of the descending cosmic rays, joined the great ascending flame that rose from the earth on its way back home to the source. Meanwhile, as more and more souls incarnated on the earth, more and more energy was called forth from the cosmic rays, more matter was spiritualized and the area of anchorage extended deeper into the earth. The earth became more and more perfect in form as the people expended more and more love upon matter, and attained more mastery in freeing imprisoned light. Such a high state of harmony was reached by the third root race that when the call went forth for a classroom for the laggards, the earth people responded. The population agreed to receive the laggards, permitting them to come in through the natural gates of birth. Birth in those days was not a physical process, however, but electrical. It was accomplished by the crossing and union of positive and negative light rays projected forth by the chosen parents. This system will again be restored on the planet Earth during the present Aquarian Age. The Earth people felt quite confident that the laggards, being born into such an atmosphere of joy and harmony, would quickly adapt themselves to the young and progressive evolutionary procedure on the planet, and forgetting their past would join in developing the divine plan on this globe. The laggards were brought in as souls, but their causal bodies were encased in dense astral bodies of ugly coloration because they were heavily burdened with karma resulting from their misspent lives on other planets and stars. Their mental bodies were beclouded with self-created thought forms of monstrous appearance, and they were unable to absorb more than a flicker of light from their individualized God nature. Therefore, being virtually helpless, they had to be brought to the Earth in spaceships manned by special teachers, and they were then held in a specially prepared astral atmosphere near the Earth until each had a chance to be born in a physical body. These physical bodies were not as dense as they are now, but light and quite ethereal, with a high rate of vibration. The people did not walk, but levitated. There was no physical labor or struggle of any kind, no distress and no disease. The high hopes which the Earth people had for the laggards did not manifest. The laggards, once in physical bodies, continued their old ways. They refused to respond to their new harmonious environment. They insisted on using their own free will to create their own monstrous follies. They declined to assist in unfolding the divine plan. Moreover, they polluted and poisoned the radiant atmosphere with their astral emanations. Scorning all cooperative endeavors spiritually, They grew and matured in physical grossness, they mated and produced offspring of their kind, they poisoned their physical bodies with their own misguided emotions and thoughts of hatred, they introduced disease on the planet, they experienced death instead of the glorious ascension back to the source, they lost all contact with their source, they refused to believe in the One. Their vision was so beclouded that they could not see the interaction of the descending rays and the ascending flame. They doomed themselves to long, wearying cycles of birth, death and rebirth. For a long while the Third Root Race people, hosts to the laggards, managed to maintain the status quo among themselves. They kept the sacred flames burning brightly upon their altars, they adored a One. They kept green the memory of those paradisiacal days before the laggards came. But the frightful contamination became worse. The atmosphere around the earth became gloomy and dark, the rays could no longer penetrate to the vegetation and soil, only the physical sunlight, devoid of the life-giving God essence of the great universal virtues, reached the people. No longer did the earth give forth its natural note of harmony. Its great vibrant chords were missing from the music of the spheres. No longer did the earth give off light, for the flame had ceased to rise. This, in brief, is the story of the fall of man. Conditions became so hopeless that the hierarchy of this solar system, meeting in conclave 18.5 million years ago, decided to abandon the evolutionary experiment on the earth and dissolve the planet. But Sanat Kumara, ruler of Venus, asked to be permitted to try to restore harmony on the Earth. His wish was granted, and leaving the planet Venus in charge of Lady Venus, goddess of beauty in this solar system, Sanat Kumara came to the Earth with about 100 helpers, and set up headquarters on an island in the Gobi Sea, now the Gobi Desert. This was called the White Island of Shambhala. Page 13. Sanat Kumara, with all his vast powers as one of the greatest adepts in the galaxy, struggled for 18.5 million years to restore order on the Earth, and to save the planet from dissolution. Early in his reign as Lord of the World, he submerged the contaminated continent of Lemuria, home of the Third Root Race, in the area now known as the Pacific Ocean. A remaining seed group of Lemurians settled in Africa and became the ancestors of the present Negro race. Easter Island was sealed against the ravages of time and preserved as a monument to old Lemuria. Also, the melody of an ancient Lemurian song has been passed down to us and is still sung today. Auld Lang Syne. Under the direction of Sanat Kumara, a selected group started the Fourth Root Race. The Atlans, in the area now covered by the waters of the Atlantic Ocean. But the contamination of the laggards proved too great. Black magicians reigned in high places and the practice of black magic became widespread throughout the populace. Finally, Sanat Kumara was forced to order the submerging of Atlantis. Remnants of the population scattered and formed the present Chinese and Japanese races, among others. The scriptures carry a partial account of this great deluge, together with the significant statement that the world, or worldliness as introduced by the laggards in the form of gross materialism, leading to black magic, would again be destroyed, but by fire from heaven rather than water. This is the violet fire of the seventh cosmic ray, which is the ray that white magicians use to transmute black magic. It is now in manifestation and will energize the planet for the next 2,000 years of the Aquarian Age. These, then, are the latter days. 14. This brings the history of humanity to the present fifth root race, and to its present turning point as the sixth root race is being formed under the direction of the Christ forces, assisted by thousands of adepts drawn from all parts of our galaxy. These visitors we have come to know as space people. Now is the time when the final cleansing is to take place on the Earth's surface, within the interior of the planet which had also become contaminated, and in the dense astral atmosphere of the Earth, which now extends 10,000 feet above the surface of the globe. It is in this astral area around the Earth that all of the contamination has accumulated from the emotional emanations given off by individuals through the ages, and where hover the frightful thought forms thrown off by the race. In this astral area, until 1957, were also found all disembodied entities known as earthbound spirits. They refused, under their privilege to use their free will in any manner whatsoever, to leave the earth, and mingled freely with the populace, often inciting those in physical bodies to commit deeds of violence. However, by November 1957, this sordid and sorry tale of the fall of man had ended. Sanat Kumara had completed his work of restoration to a point where he was able to leave the Earth and return to his home planet of Venus. With the aid of tens of thousands of individuals from other planets coming to the assistance of the Earth at this time, and with renewed help from the angelic kingdom which had been forced to virtually withdraw during the isolated years, the interior of the globe has been cleansed. Every single earthbound entity has been removed from the astral atmosphere, and all black magicians have been seized and taken from the globe. The forces of darkness are still operating among black disciples and tools in human bodies, but as these individuals die, they will not be permitted to reincarnate unless they agree to serve the light. The contaminated astral atmosphere around the Earth, although still being constantly poisoned by emanations of hatred, vengeance, greed and lust generated by living human beings, is being bombarded night and day by powerful rays directed from spaceships orbiting the Earth, by cleansing energies from sources flying close to the Earth, and by fireballs, manufactured on Mars, being exploded near the ground in contaminated areas which cannot be reached by flying saucers. Although disease and death, and all the old fears of poverty, war, hunger and helplessness, still stalk the Earth, these grim specters are attracted hence only by the unlighted ones, by the diehards, the sinister secretive, the stubborn skeptics. In other words, by the laggards who are still lagging. However, it is now in this brief interval just ahead that death itself will at long last prove to be a cleansing blessing to this globe rather than a curse, for now as soon an individual is released from his physical body, anywhere on the globe, he is removed immediately from the Earth's astral atmosphere. No discarnates are allowed to linger near the Earth. No matter what may be the circumstances surrounding the death of an individual, he is permitted only 3 months of rest after shedding his physical body. Then he must be up and doing, working on a new assignment. If he is hopelessly enmeshed in karma, he may be removed from the Earth entirely and permitted to take rebirth on another hospital planet, with specially prepared vibrations suitable to his condition. Page 16. If he is to come back into re-embodiment on this planet, he must prepare by undergoing special purification processes in temples of the violet fire in the etheric realm. This is the time when all worldliness and materialism such as we have known is to be destroyed by the violet fire of the seventh ray, the fire of transmutation through the divine qualities of mercy, forgiveness and compassion. On the inner planes, the sheep have been separated from the goats in a separation which is final for these times. In other words, the future of nearly 10 billion souls associated with this earth evolution at this time, has been decided by the lords of karma. Actually, it has been decided by each individual himself, through hundreds of embodiments down through long centuries, but the record for each soul has been submitted for review at this time. These records clearly show how much light is being used by each individual, for we all use light according to our capacity. If our record shows that in the past we have been able to make use of only a small amount of light, then it is pointless to continue evolution on this planet. These unlighted ones, if they could not keep up with their evolutionary classwork in the past, would be dire misfits in the vastly improved conditions which will unfold on this planet in the immediate future. These conditions are already causing an extremely increased tempo in mental, emotional and etheric vibrations as well as in material physical aspects. Material situations will be so greatly improved within a few years that the planet will be unrecognizable according to present low standards. The globe, during the past 19 million years, became so heavily weighted with discord that it drooped on its bent axis like a weary flower on a stalk. Page 17. Now the angelic kingdom, under the supervision of planetary and cosmic hierarchs, has straightened the axis, a task which was started in its early phase over 20 years ago. The final phase was started on January 1, 1957 and completed late in 1958. Meanwhile, the Earth is moving in a sidewise motion as it edges into a new orbit, and at the same time is being lifted up, spiraling into a new spatial region.